This is the audio that goes with Top Tobacco versus North American Operating Company, and also a discussion about registration. So the first slide, Top Tobacco versus NA Operating Company. The casebook authors kind of want to present you a little bit about trademark infringement at this stage. I have to admit, this is one thing I don't like about the book. I think it kind of pushes us a little bit out of order, but I still want to talk about it because it gives us another example of thinking about how we look at trademark distinctiveness. So on the left is Top cigarette tobacco. This is a loose leaf cigarette tobacco that I can put in and roll my own cigarettes if they're out of those Swisher Sweets at my local CVS. And then right is Zigzag cigarette tobacco, which if you look closely, you can say they have a fresh top canister. And the reason Top Cigarette Tobacco is suing Zigzag for trademark infringement is they don't like their usage of the word top. This is actually an easy infringement case, this idea that the usage on the right of the word top is enough to infringe the one on the left top is just not possible, mainly in the little bit excerpt here talks a lot about the idea that consumers just wouldn't associate the use on the right as a source identifier. Zigzag's not using the word top to identify its product. It just wants to talk about the fact that it's got a top on it, essentially using the word in its descriptive sense that keeps it fresh. But if we look on the left, we say, well, is that a protectable trademark, top, for cigarette tobacco? It probably is, right? And as we think in our level of our spectrum of distinctiveness, it's probably arbitrary and fanciful. If I use the word top to identify tobacco, really no association at all, maybe suggestive, I guess, makes you feel on top, not for long, heaven forbid we get that lung cancer or whatever, but probably is protectable, probably is arbitrary and fanciful. But that's not the end of the story, because just because I have a protectable mark doesn't mean other people can't use the term. They have to use the term in a manner that's likely to cause confusion. And we're going to delve into this deeper in a couple of classes. But this gives you a preview as to, look, just because I've got a protectable mark doesn't mean that I can't prevent others from using the term in any context, right? And here the court said, look, consumers looking at the one on the right wouldn't even think that the word top's being used as a source identifier at all. While the one on the left, right, it's prominently displayed, etc. In some ways, the mark that's being used on the right there is Zigzag, which I, as even someone who doesn't, has never really smoked, still knows about Zigzag brands as a source identifier for tobacco. And so then after this case, we get introduced to this concept of trademark registration. So there's the United States Patent and Trademark Office, and we talked a lot about the patent side a couple of classes ago. Well, now this is the trademark side of the house. And so I can file for a trademark, and it will be examined, not simply registered like the Copyright Office, in a sense that the Trademark Office has trademark examiners, just like the patent side has patent examiners, that look at your trademark application and try to determine whether it's trademarkable or not. Does it meet the validity requirements? Mainly looking to see whether it's distinctive, whether you have priority, and whether you've had evidence that you've used it in commerce. I don't need to register a trademark to get protection, even on the federal level. There are common law rights that I get from just using the mark in commerce. So if I, in that previous slide, if I was top, and here actually it looks like it's registered, you can see the circle R, kind of small lettering if you go back to slide one. Even if I hadn't registered, but I'm using it in commerce, I can prove that it's distinctive, and I'm the first one to use it as an identifier for those goods, cigarette tobacco, I would get protection and actually would be able to sue under the Lanham Act. But I can register, right? And why would I register? There's a list of reasons to register on slide two. I'd register because I want to provide this prima facie case of validity. If it's registered, it's presumed to be valid. They're the ones that whoever I sue has to prove now that it's not valid. The fact that I've registered it also gives me prima facie evidence that I am the owner of the mark, right? And here corporations are the owners of these marks. Also, when I register, I get constructive nationwide use. So it might turn out that I start selling my top tobacco just here in the Richmond area. My protection is typically limited to the geographical location of the use that I'm engaged in. And so I would only have priority in the Richmond area. But once I file with the United States Patent and Trademark Office, I get de facto nationwide use. And that would then create this ability for me to be the senior user everywhere in the United States where someone hadn't used the word top to identify tobacco before I had registered. And then finally, I get some really good enforcement benefits. I can go down to customs. I can use them to kind of get after knockoffs that are also calling their tobacco products top. I can also go to the domain name registrars and say, hey, wait a minute, somebody registered top.com. I actually already have exclusivity of the word top for these goods and services, tobacco, etc. So there are benefits to registration. And so it turns out registration, if we go to slide three, is governed by a couple of requirements, and I'm just going to kind of introduce you to them. Some of them are very similar to the requirements for validity. Some of them are unique to registration. These are all under Section 2 of the Lanham Act. And here's the preamble on slide three. No trademark by which the goods of the applicant may be distinguished from the goods of others shall be refused registration on the principal registrar on account of its nature unless it. And they say this preamble actually prevents the registration for generic marks because generic marks have no ability to distinguish goods from one or another. They're defining the whole genus, right? So if I use the mark a car to identify an automobile, it's doing no distinction at all because consumers think all those automobiles are cars, right? It defines that whole category of goods. What else can I not register? One of the things that I can also register is marks that consist of immoral, deceptive, or scandalous material. It actually turns out that this has been invalidated by the Supreme Court for First Amendment grounds. And so the Washington Redskins getting their registration rejected because the mark Redskins was considered to be immoral. At least the Supreme Court has recently determined, is an impingement on First Amendment rights of corporations, their ability to speak. The other thing that I can't do is use geographical indications on wines or spirits when I'm actually identifying somebody, some other place than where the goods come from. A for example here is I can't use the word champagne to identify my sparkling wine unless that wine is actually manufactured in Champagne, France, right? So this is part of our ability to have these geographical mark indicators and protections that are really big some ways in the United States, but also elsewhere. But here it's limited to wines and spirits. I can't also have marks that are the flag of a U.S. state or foreign country. I can't also register marks where their living person is alive, and I'm trying to use them unless they've consented to their likeness. So if you decided to start selling Christopher Cutrupia tobacco, you would need to get my consent. I can't also use the image of a dead president while the widow is alive without the widow's consent. So this is how I can now use the side view of Abraham Lincoln for Lincoln Financial because his widow has since passed away. But I couldn't use it for, let's think of another president that's recently passed away, George Herbert Bush without, well, the Barbara Bush has passed away too. That's a bummer. I don't know. Let's not think more about that. And then if we go to slide four, I believe, we get some other requirements. And that is, I can't get registration for marks that are likely to cause confusion with other marks. This is a Section D violation. Essentially, basically saying you're the junior user. Somebody out there is actually already using this mark to identify similar products. And we don't want to register a mark that could cause confusion. So if Top has already registered their mark to identify tobacco products, I'd like to register the mark Top. I'm going to get a rejection from the Trademark Office under Section 2D because it's likely to cause confusion. I'm also not going to get registration under E for a variety of descriptive marks unless I can prove that I've acquired distinctiveness. So E1, the mark is merely descriptive. This is just like our discussion in the cocoa butter formula case. So if I tried to get the registration cocoa butter formula, which actually is what they tried to do in that case, and basically the Trademark Office rejected them under E1 grounds and said, okay, we'll put you on the supplemental register. You won't get on the principal register until you prove that you've acquired distinctiveness. I actually also don't get protection for marks that are primarily geographically descriptive. And so here the idea is if I tried to register Wisconsin cheese, the question becomes is, okay, is that primarily a geographical region? Yes, Wisconsin is, and most people know Wisconsin. And do people normally think of this good cheese from Wisconsin as having some kind of pre-identified source, which I guess they do, right? That kind of Wisconsin's known for its cheese. I wouldn't be able to get registration for that mark because it would be descriptive. And then finally, I can't get registration if I'm if there's already this kind of good place association, but I'm actually deceptively misdescriptive. And so here the idea is I'm trying to register Wisconsin cheese for cheeses that are not made in Wisconsin. So here not only do people already have this goods place association, the cheese from Wisconsin or ham from Virginia has a certain connotation, but I'm actually deceiving the public because it turns out that good actually doesn't come from there. If we go to five, I can also not get a registration for a primarily merely a surname, right? So Smith's Cookies, people think of Smith as primarily a surname. That's descriptive. I can't get registration for a mark that is functional. We'll talk about that. And then finally, under F, I can overcome these rejections for A, B, C, D, E3 and E5. I actually can't overcome them at all. I can never overcome trying to get the dead president mark. Or what's interesting here is I can't overcome a rejection where it's primarily geographically deceptively misdescriptive. There, the thought is the public's just being deceived. I can't overcome a functional rejection, but I can overcome some of the other rejections if I can prove secondary meaning. That is, that I have acquired distinctiveness. I can overcome that primarily merely a surname, Smith's Cookies, if I can eventually prove that the public no longer thinks that's just cookies made by somebody whose name is Smith, but more so initially thinks, no, they actually come from a single source, that being me, or it's geographically descriptive, Wisconsin cheese, but now people actually don't think of just cheese from Wisconsin. They think of it coming from a single source, and I can overcome those to give a sense and to show that I've acquired distinctiveness and overcome that rejection. Just giving you a sense of what registration is like, right? Why would you want to do it? It helps you with enforcement. It helps you with identifying ownership. It gets you this de facto nationwide kind of protection everywhere. What kind of rejections might I get? Descriptiveness rejections. You've got to prove you've acquired distinctiveness, a generic rejection or likely to confusion. But then there are also some of these unique ones, right? Geographically misdescriptive, which I can't overcome, or the idea that I can't get a mark for a state flag, for example. So that just gives you a taste.